White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 326.
LSU strikes first. Heron for three at the other end.
Got it.
Well, I think that's what you're going to see Auburn do a lot of today. Head fake at three. Drives it in. Got it knocked loose. Kicks right back to Heron. And he buries the three from the wing. Harper to Brown. Catch. Shoot. Three. Got it. Harper drives. Kicks to Murray. Corner for stop. Three. Got it. Passes it to Murray. He'll try a three. And made it. Outlet to Harper from way out. Got it. Rice. Three. Got it. Mitchell. No look. Inside of Kiki for the jam. Malik Dunbar shoots a three over Sampson. Got it. Auburn the rebound. Harper. Long pass ahead. Brown three. Yes, sir. Rice now to Anthony. Three over Reed. Good. Rice Brown for three. Whoa. 17-point Auburn lead. Brown for three. Make it 20. Saves it to Chuma with eight. Chuma with six. Left free throw. Good.
A tremendous job on. We turned it over again.
Down at the other end, and then they turn it right back. Murray to Harper to Dunbar. A miracle in Jordan Hare. A miracle in Jordan Hare.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with a bunch of other people. Hey, look, the thing's working now. brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with, who all are we in association with? I don't have it in front of me right now. We've been having all kind of technical problems tonight.
The War Eagle Reader Doc and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
And by our good friends that support us via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico. I'm pulling my hair out over our computer. It's doing it again, people. Just when we thought we had everything squared away, it's been giving me a hot mic. Then it's not. Everything is going wrong. We've been trying for 30 minutes just to get this started. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host. I hope.
I'm John Ringer.
The long
just messing with you.
The long suffering John Ringer. Yeah, well, that was another problem, was that you can't hear the soundboard, so you have no idea that I'm
smoke weed every day
hitting that button because you can't really hear it. So, and I had that fixed too.
Is that a feature or a bug?
Depends on which seat you're sitting in this relationship, I believe, John. Yeah, I'm just going to rip this entire system apart and buy a whole new computer, a whole new microphone, a new host to talk to you, and I'm just going to go to bed. Oh, God. All right. Well, we're just going to do a brief show tonight just to check in because it is the depths of the off season, and I guess basketball is the main thing going on, but we do have a couple other things to talk about. We've got... as you note on the agenda, and as I've always been saying on Twitter this week, Auburn basketball has become our happy place. Auburn Arena is our happy place because we have the basketball to watch, and we got a game coming up Tuesday night, again, I think, at Ole Miss. We got another game on Saturday. That's one thing about basketball. You get plenty of games, and then including during the week. You have to wait till Saturday every week. We've got a new – but let's first look at some other news. We got a new athletics director. What do you know about Alan Green – I believe that's who it is, right?
Yes.
And I know he came from Buffalo, and I know he graduated from Notre Dame, and I know that he has connections. He was at Ole Miss for a while. Apparently very personable. People like him. Good fundraiser. What all do we know and think about him beyond that?
All right. He has an excellent reputation. He's young.
Mm-hmm. John, he did not play offensive line for Pat Dye, so we're going in a new direction.
It's a different direction. He was a student athlete. He played baseball at Notre Dame. It was drafted and played minor league baseball for a while and then got out and did some – I think he did software coding and for the finance industry and then worked in that for a while. And then he got into athletic directing, and he worked for the guy who is now athletic director at Central Florida – who is a young up-and-coming star in the athletic department world, and whose father is the athletic director at Duke.
Wait, is this the Mr. White to go along with the Mr. Green?
Yes. Yes.
We're everywhere.
But the athletic director of Central Florida, his friend, flew to Auburn for his introductory press conference. Wow. And so they worked together at Ole Miss. He started out there in, kind of the fundraising side, but did a bunch of other athletic department stuff there. And then he was the assistant athletic director at Buffalo and then the athletic director at Buffalo for the past few years. And he's, has a great reputation. People really like him. He's very charismatic and a good fundraiser, but also, he's been around people who know what they're doing in the athletic department thing. And he's been exposed to the SEC thing. And the other thing is, I think he really comes at it with a focus on the student athlete, not, as much as on the big picture, the budget or the good old boys or anything else. Like, he cares about the student athletes at Auburn and their well-being and how they're doing and stuff. And so I think that's going to be exciting. And everybody that's talked to him and heard him speak so far has been very excited about him. So I think Auburn made a really good hire. I was happy. We talked about this before that I wanted somebody from the outside, right? And it doesn't get much more outside than this.
Yeah.
That's great. So I was happy to see that they went in that direction. And I think, he said he's going to, for the next few months, kind of just listen and look around. He's not going to start making dramatic changes right away, but I think a couple months from now, you could see some changes in the athletic department, some people forced out or some new people brought in different positions on the administrative side.
No more batches of tickets suddenly appearing at the last second and going to big money donors or whatever that whole deal was that we were hearing about. There's the short term, there's the long term. In the short term, he certainly seems like a home run. In the long term, we'll have to see, because athletic directors are ultimately judged on the coaches they hire and the state of the program, the financial situation, and how just people feel about it. He hasn't had to hire anybody yet, so that's like being elected president, and you haven't yet had to sign or veto anything or say anything people don't like. So once he has to actually start making some big decisions, we'll see how it goes. I mean, you can say all the bad that you want to say about Jay Jacobs, and I'm not here to praise him or to bury him, but I will, just as a little brief eulogy of him as athletic director, just point out he did hire Bruce Pearl. He did hire Gus, which I don't think that Mr. Green is going to have to worry about hiring a football coach for a while, for better or worse. He did hire the softball coach. Now, nobody could have predicted the debacle that was going to end up with, but for a while there, it looked like the greatest hire Jay Jacobs ever made, right? He had some hits there, and there was some stuff that was really beyond his control. So, you can't complain too much. I mean, obviously people do, but how do we grade Jay Jacobs' tenure, kind of looking back now that it's over?
It's a good question. I mean, I think there are things in terms of the budget or the athletic department or the state of the stadium and the other facilities that people would complain about. And then, like you were you kind of saying with the ticket stuff a minute ago, there was kind of a focus on taking care of some good old boy big money boosters. But the other thing is, I think you're right that he did have some good hires. And especially as we talk about basketball tonight, Bruce Pearl is the best hire, at Auburn in any sport in a long time.
Okay.
He's great. Mm-hmm. And he's just been, since the minute he got on campus, even before this season, Bruce Pearl has been a fountain of positive energy.
Absolutely.
All around that campus, going out and meeting with the students and the alumni, reaching out to people, getting them excited about Auburn basketball at a time when, it was hard to be excited about Auburn basketball coming off the seasons we had had. So,
well, I tell you this, I don't know how things are going to end with all the investigation and everything, But if it ends with Bruce Pearl leaving or being fired or going to jail or whatever, and I don't see why it would at this point, because as somebody was, people are constantly pointing out, you know, just because one assistant was doing something doesn't mean it has anything to do with anybody else. But of course, the whole national perception is he's a dirty coach at a dirty program at a dirty college. And I mean, we know that that's completely ridiculous. And we've been fighting that whole mindset for years and years, but that's just the way some people are always going to think about it. And it's infuriating. It's depressing. That's just how it is. But I'll say this. If it does end with us parting company from Bruce Pearl, I think at that point we should just fold up the program and not even have a basketball program, because I can't imagine anybody else that we could get, that we could have, that would have us, that would do, you know, anywhere as well as what he's done. We really have been fortunate.
That's the truth.
I was telling a friend the other day, I said, you know, the thing of it is, if he hadn't had that mishap at Tennessee, he would be coaching a top 10 program somewhere in the country right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really Auburn's benefit that he got in trouble, because he would not be coaching Auburn basketball if he hadn't gotten in trouble at Tennessee. You know what I mean?
Sure. Oh, yeah. No, he'd be the coach at
UCLA or
yes,
somewhere like that. Yeah.
So. 100%. So, I mean, things work in strange ways, and his path to Auburn was like that. But no, you're right. He's a, I mean, we are very fortunate to have him. So,
yeah. Another news item, we hired a special teams analyst. I think the guy from Missouri, I think that was probably something we needed to do. Don't you think?
Yes. And again, he's not an on-field coach. He's an analyst, but anything that helps special teams get better. Amen. I didn't look to see where Missouri special teams are ranked, but anything that we're doing on the analytical side, you know, the coaching analysis side to get better at special teams is good. Well, we got to do it.
He's going to come in and look at film from this past season. He's going to look at our field goal kicking and go,
holy cow! Oh, my God!
And then he's going to look at our every other part of our special teams, and he's going to go, I don't know if you could hear that, but the first was Rod's, oh, my God. The second was the Georgia, oh, my God. Two sides of the coin. All right, so let's look at Auburn basketball a little bit. Well, you and I have always been big Auburn basketball fans. We were watching them all the way back, probably in the '80s. The earliest I remember really watching Auburn basketball was when they were in the SEC tournament, I think in 84. The year they won the tournament, beating Alabama in the finals?
85.
Yeah, I didn't really watch him much with Charles. That was right before I started paying attention. But I started paying attention because they barely were on television or anything back then, you know. But, I mean, ever. But yeah, when they got in the SEC tournament, when they started going to the NCAA tournament every year, I was totally, you know, dialed in watching that all the time. And that 86 run where they beat Arizona, St. John's, and UNLV, and then lost to national champion Louisville to go to the Final Four. I mean, that was an amazing couple of weeks in Auburn basketball history. That was just that was unbelievable. We've never quite got, you know, we've gotten to the Sweet 16 a couple of times since then, but we've never gotten back to the Elite Eight, and of course, we've never gone to the Final Four. So, what's the ceiling on this year's team?
Jerry Palm said today the ceiling for Auburn is national championship.
Yeah, well, I, you know.
I
don't know about that.
He's a respected voice of college basketball. But, I would say this, like, Auburn has a chance to do some things we have, you know, never or rarely ever done. We only have two regular season basketball titles in school history.
Yeah.
And we have a chance to win this one. We're in great position to win the regular season title. We have one regular season tournament title, 1985.
Mm-hmm.
We need to – I mean, if we could win the SEC tournament and the SEC regular season, I think that would go a long way. Even if we don't win the tournament, if we win the regular season, that would be a huge moment for this program. And well, I mean, that you look at the current projections, there's a site called Bracket Matrix is one of them that takes basically all the projections from all the different projected brackets and shows where teams are. And Auburn is basically a 2 seed right now in the tournament.
Wow.
Which is, I mean, I think at the beginning of the season, I was like, you know, please let us get in. And then the stuff happened with Chuck Person, and I thought we were, hosed and we weren't going to make it. That, the season with so much promise was going to fall short. And now we are here in a place where, we're in position to win the SEC regular season and we're projected to be a 2 seed. And it's a little bit insane.
You know, before it all started, I was like, Lord, please let us make the NIT this year. After everything came down, I'm like, Lord, please let us have a basketball program by the end of this year. So the thought of actually going to the tournament, much less having a high seed, is just unfathomable, especially with the two guys that are not even in. Although, I'll be honest with you, I mean, Purifoy is a great player. I wonder if we wouldn't have lost the game or two we won with him just because he's so quick to shoot. If he hadn't, he had a little Chris Morris to him a little bit, but we can talk about that. But do you remember the last time we were a 1 seed in the NCAA tournament?
That was 99, right?
Yeah, Chris Porter's team, Damian Fishback's team. That team was a number 1 seed. They went in. This is all off the top of my head because I remember these things for some reason. But, yeah, they were number 1 seed. I want to say they beat Winthrop in the first round, who was a 16. But they struggled with them. And then in the second round, I feel like we played an Oklahoma State team that was maybe a number 8 seed or a 9 seed or whatever, and we struggled with them a little bit but beat them. And then in the Sweet 16, do you remember what happened?
We lost Ohio State
with Scoony Penn or whatever his name was. Yeah, we lost to Ohio State, who went on to the Final Four, I believe. So, yeah, I really felt like that team should have been our Final Four team. So it was extremely disappointing to me to lose to that Ohio State team. That really bugged me. So, yeah, I mean, this team may not have the big inside player or two, but they've got they're getting it done. They're rebounding without a huge guy. I mean, one of our guys that's like leading the SEC in block shots, and he's shorter than everybody else he's competing with for that title right now.
It's amazing, this team that like is undersized, but they are one of the leaders nationally in block shots in the conference, leading the block shots.
That defense. And
playing great defense. Murray is like 6'3", maybe, but he makes all the inside buckets and he's getting the tough rebounds and stuff. The biggest thing is something you hit on earlier, which is with the Purifoy comment, which is there's a very large amount of unselfishness in this team.
Right.
And
exactly.
A real joy of playing together that you could see when you watch them play. They're willing to share the ball and make the pass and let the other guy score. Nobody's like, I have to get my shots in. And it's really, it's liberated them. Like nobody has to feel like I got to be the guy, because they all know it's going to come around. They're going to get their day. And because they feel like they've kind of given themselves up for the greater good of the team. And I think, whatever happens with Auburn this year in terms of the SEC and the NCAA tournament, Bruce Pearl better win Coach of the Year in this conference and some national Coach of the Year awards, because it's unbelievable what he has done.
Yes.
With this team. And with basically a brand new assistant and his son and a replacement assistant for Chuck Person as his assistant coaches. He didn't have like two former head coaches sitting on the bench helping him through this stuff. So, and the other piece that just warms my heart is this team plays defense. We were at almost as good an offensive team last year, but they couldn't stop anybody.
No.
And now they really play defense, and it's dramatic.
They're making free throws. That's something. I thought you were supposed to sign some kind of a document when you sign with Auburn that says you promise not to make your free throws.
They free throw shooting is a learned skill, and you're seeing that here. Yeah. Like, you spend enough time on it and you practice it enough, you can get better at it. And this team is the Auburn's free throw shooting from where it was 2 or 3 years ago, 4 years ago, is unbelievable. Yeah. We couldn't hit 50% back then, and now we're one of the better free throw shooting teams in the country, which is huge in a close game against a good team. This team can make free throws, they can defend, they could score in multiple ways. The unselfishness is a huge advantage, because this team doesn't have, you know, one guy that the opponent can just say, we shut him down and we win. Like, it fine. You wanna focus on, you know, uncovering Heron, you know, then Harper or Brown or somebody else will beat you. Like, there's no guy you have to, you know, the other team focuses on that Auburn can't adjust and make them pay for it. So it's an exciting game. I mean, the win over LSU this weekend really reminded me of that 99 team when there was a game at home on TV when they crushed Ole Miss mm-hmm. and blew them out. And it really reminded me of that. So I'm excited. You know, in 2003, Auburn went to the tournament, and I had to work, and I when one of the games was on, the whichever game was, the Thursday Friday game, and you know, so I tell people, like, you need to find out, you know, what those, you know, what those 2 days are, and start now planning your work schedule so that you could potentially watch all of it, because we may be like a noon tip off on that Thursday or Friday. So there's no guarantee we're going to be a night game. So you need to start thinking ahead about that, because it's going to come.
And the SEC tournament is up here in St. Louis, and I'm very excited about that. I was just saying on Twitter a couple of days ago that I said when I first found out about 2 weeks ago the tournament was here, I didn't realize. When I found out it was here, I thought, well, I guess I could try to go on Thursday and see us play, you know, our one game or whatever, our two games. Maybe if I can get over there. It's awfully expensive. The tickets are $360 for the pass. I'm like, good gosh, I can't afford all that. But it would be nice to go over and see a game or two. Now I feel like it's almost my duty to go to the whole thing, you know. But fortunately, one of my colleagues, who I've probably mentioned a couple of times on our show before, is a Kentucky guy. And he told me the other day that he's got some friends coming in for the tournament, and they're not going to want to go to every game. And he's like, so we might be able to work something out. So he came to me with that. So
nice.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see. We might be able to work some kind of a swap deal where I can get a ticket into, assuming we don't end up playing Kentucky in the first or second round, which I imagine we wouldn't.
We will not.
Right. So
I'm just excited we're not going to be in the play-in game again.
Yeah, that's right. We won't have to play, what, 5 days in a row or something? So,
mm-hmm.
Or however it works now. So, yeah, you know, the team that won the SEC championship tournament, won the tournament in 85, they came from the first day.
Four games in 4 days.
Yeah. They went all the way through, and they won it by beating Alabama by making those free throws down the end. I still remember that. I haven't ever seen a replay of it. I haven't ever seen anything like that. In fact, but I do remember them making those clutch free throws at the end to win it. And that was the year after Barkley, I think, left.
And Person was there.
Yeah, we had Chuck Person, Gerald White, Frank Ford, maybe Chris Morris, maybe
Moore.
Jeff Moore, yeah, that was a Terrence Howard was our backup point guard, Johnny Lynn. They were kind of spread out over several years there, so I don't remember. I know that Frank Ford graduated about the time that Terrence Howard came in, and Chuck Person was gone after 86. So by 87, 88, it was really Chris Morris and Jeff Moore's show, maybe Gerald White. But anyway, the point guard. But that was about the time they were putting the three-point circle in. They didn't have it, I don't think, up until then. We were just an inside banging away team, you know. But teams weren't really shooting 3 points like that. That's what we need. I'd like to find, and I don't know if it's on YouTube or what, but I'd like to find a video highlights of our basketball team in the 80s. And so, yeah, this is Van editing in here for just a second later to say that it was just as I feared. Yet another dreaded technical glitch happened. John and I talked for another like 10 minutes about the basketball program, the basketball team and its success and statistics and stuff. And for whatever reason, the recorder had stopped working. So it's gone. But at least we only lost a few minutes, and now it picked right back up at the end, because at the end of our basketball discussion, I noticed it wasn't the clock wasn't moving, even though it still acted like it was recording. And so I stopped it and restarted it, and here's where we picked back up again. And by the way, this just highlights what I was saying is the need for our Patreon supporters to grow, because we need new equipment. This is getting very frustrating. We're doing all this hard work and we're not being able to bring it to you. So, all right, here's where it picks up again. All right, so that's basketball. We want to talk briefly about what you call the accountability discussion before we wrap up. What is this all about?
Well, we like that Barrett Salee does this, where he holds himself accountable by posting his predictions versus the outcomes. And so I went back and I listened to both of the barbecue prediction podcasts for this past year.
Oh, look at you.
And wrote down what we predicted, mm-hmm. and a couple of notes. And I wanted to talk about those very briefly.
Well, off the top of my head, I do know that it seemed like we agreed that we would lose two games and one of them would be at LSU.
Yes.
I feel like we thought we would beat Clemson and lose to somebody else.
Well, we'll start with Auburn then. We both predicted 11-1.
Oh, okay.
And you made a very clear statement. You said Georgia is mandatory. It is not optional. We must beat Georgia. Then of the other three big games, Clemson, LSU, and Alabama, you went through the scenarios of win all three, win two of three, win one of three.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and how you would be disappointed if it was only one of three. And you kind of hinted that you would be okay if it was Alabama, the one of three. But you would still, it wouldn't be as great as.
Just given because they were expected to be so good, right?
Yes. So that was the, in terms of the Auburn discussion, that was the record. That was the biggest thing, is we both thought we would lose at LSU.
Yeah.
We talked about that a lot.
Isn't that strange?
That we thought that was a clear pothole for us. So Alabama, you said 10-2, and I said 11-1, but you picked him to lose to FSU, and the quarterback getting hurt, I think, was maybe the difference there. Arkansas, you said 6-6, and I said 5-7, and they went 4-8.
we were hard enough on old Burt.
Nope. LSU, we both said 9-3, and they were 9-3.
Wow, look at that. I don't think we would have picked the three they lost, but yeah.
Good gosh, no, we would not have.
They lost to Alabama, Troy, and who else?
Mississippi State.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Ole Miss, we both said 5-7, and they went 6-6. Mississippi State, we both said 6-6, and they went 9-3.
Yeah, they did overachieve, and that's one of the reasons why he's at Florida now.
Well, but it was also a result of kind of the rest of the West falling. I think for A&M, we both said 7-5 or 8-4, and they went 7-5. And then on the East side, I would encourage people to go back and listen to the East podcast again, just to hear Van's like epic 15-minute rant about Missouri playing at Connecticut.
I remember that. Yeah, that was fun.
It was very, very well done.
Thank you. Yes. I was proud. I was very proud of that.
It was good. We thought Florida would go 8-4, and they went 4-7.
Wow. They didn't even play as many games as we needed them to play to get to 8-4. My gosh.
And then Georgia, you thought they'd go 9-3, and I thought they'd go 8-4. That was really the biggest miss I had, is I didn't think they would be great, and they went 11-1. Kentucky, you said 6-6, and I said 8-4, and they went 7-6. I kept joking about how I predicted every team would go 8-4. Tennessee, you said 8-4, and I said 7-5, and they went 4-8.
Oh boy, yeah, that didn't go the.
Nope. And then Missouri, we both said 4-8, and they went 7-6.
Well, let's be honest here. There was a point in the season where it looked like 4-8 was optimistic for Missouri. They really just flipped the switch somewhere along the line.
Looked like 2-10 for a while there.
It did.
And then Vandy, you said 5-7, and I said 4-8, and they went 5-7. And then South Carolina, you said 9-3, and I said 7-5, and they went 8-4.
Well, we're pretty smart when you put the two of us together. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. But so we had some good points. I mean, I think we predicted some stuff, you know, in particular about Auburn. We talked about the impact that Jared Stidham and the new offensive coordinator would have and the defense. And I think we talked about Carry On having a good year and stuff. So I was pretty happy about it.
And this is all considering that we never really got ever a healthy Petway. You know, mm-hmm. if you had told us before when we were getting ready to do those shows, if you could have looked into the future and selectively just seen a couple of things, and one of them was that Petway would never be healthy and barely play at all, and the other was that Kerryon would be hurt a good bit, and another was that we would give up like 11 sacks at Clemson, believe me, it wouldn't have been 11-1 I'd have been predicting. So we really overachieved in some ways. You know, we really actually did better than I would have predicted, given the circumstances, we would do. Isn't that interesting?
Yes. That's a good point.
And I was going to say, too, that I was saying, you know, between the two of us, I've always said that you and I together equal one intelligent football analyst.
That's fair.
Yeah. All right. I'll own up to that. So, well, that's good. I'm glad you did that. I think we should make this an annual feature where we look back and particularly if you are willing to do the legwork of actually going and getting that information, or we could just like write it down when we say it so we don't have to go back and
that,
recompile
that would
it.
Be easier, but it was fun because yeah. I got to go back and hear the Connecticut thing. and then your dark horse team in the East was South Carolina and mine was Kentucky. We gave each other hard times about that.
Yeah.
So,
well, I don't know how we didn't realize that Georgia was going to have a second year under a new coach kind of a year, because that's the way it always goes, it seems.
Yeah, but the other thing I think that that nobody saw coming was Eason was the starting quarterback. Right. And he got hurt, and that allowed Fromm to emerge, and Fromm was way better than anybody could have ever imagined. So that part was truly unpredictable because we based our predictions on Eason, and I don't think Eason is that great, and now he's gone. So
right, he is, yeah. All right, do we have some listener questions? Do we have some listener questions?
Just a couple.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
All right. I sure hope there's not like 10 minutes missing out of our basketball discussion. We'll see how this, if the audio thing, I'm just going to throw this computer in the trash and buy a new one if that happens. And then I'll be begging people to add to the Patreon. By the way, we didn't say the Patreon. If you want to help me get a new microphone and maybe a new computer the way things are going, sign up. And in fact, John will be running, I'm sure, our patrons only NCAA tournament pick'em bracket, like we did the bowl thing. People really enjoyed that. So climb on board and help us get to the next threshold. Remember, if we can get up another 100, and we're about halfway up to the next level, if we can get up to another 100 on it, then we will be able to go to 2. Hopefully, games. We'll see. We'll do the best we can. But for now, we're pretty sure we're going to go to 1 and do a live show. And the way to do that is to go to Patreon, Patreon, Patreon.com, and just search Plexico. That's the easiest way. I mean, I can say Patreon.com/Van Allen Plexico, but that's a bunch of typing. Just go to Patreon.com and put in a little search box, Plexico, and it'll come up, Van Plexico, White Rocket, whatever. Go there and you pledge. You sign up for as little as $1 a month. I think the maximum is 20. And we have several people that do that. And we got to thank them right quick. We got to thank our top-of-the-line Platinum War Eagle members, Nicholas Cottrell, Joseph Fine, Christopher Burleson, and Samuel Salvatore. You guys are awesome, and you're going to get us to a ball game this year. Also, of course, our next level up, Neil Dyer, Phil Amthor of WeHaveDonuts.com. Steve Trawick, Richard Stevens, who's awesome, and Justin Bean, of course. And then you have David Evers, Tom Anderson, Timothy Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Steve Harlan, Richard Stevens. I think I have him on here twice. He may have moved up a space. Andrew Barber, Jared Ulrich, Rich Reimer, Bill Matthews, Chris Usher, Will Summerford, John McCune, and Catherine England. And then we have at the next tier down, David Simpson, Josh Teal, Mike Finley, Randall Walker, C.T. Wayne, Earl Ricks, Dave Powell, Michael Kirshner, Mick Vijakana, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, George Gaston, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen. Sitting on his own in his own created level is Clay Henson. Thanks. And then at our foundation level, we have J.W. Rice, Wardam Wade, Dave Medinas, Mark Squire, Joey Miller, Matthew Wagstaff, Russell Milling, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Brant Rumble, Nicholas Craig, plus our one-time and anonymous donors. You guys, that's a lot of folks, but we need more because clearly my technology is failing even as we speak. Longtime listeners know that from the time John and I first started doing this show, way back in 2012, we've been fighting the technology bug. And I bought this new computer, and I'm ready to throw it away. I'm ready to buy a new microphone, so help us out. Get us to our two games this year and help us get some good equipment. All right, let's do the listener questions. What do we got?
All right, first question is from Alabama Mississippi Dirt Warrior, who's
yes.
GC Gaston at 1, who says, what does the SEC 6-4 performance in the Big 12 Challenge mean for how many SEC teams will get NCAA bids, and how highly seeded AU will be if it remains one of the top teams? Does AU need to win the SEC tourney to get a one seed?
That's an excellent point by George. You know, we did not win the SEC tournament in 99, and we still got a number one seed. Because I think that team only lost one game the whole season, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know they beat Kentucky and Auburn, but they lost one other game somewhere along the line. Maybe it was Kentucky away or something. I don't know. But they didn't win the tournament. They still got a number one seed. So probably they need to win the tournament to get a number one seed, but history says not necessarily. They just don't need to lose anything up until that point. If they have two losses and that's one of them, I think they'll get a number one seed. But there will be doubts, right? People will be like, oh, it's Auburn. You know, they look like they deserve a one seed, but, you know, they're going to lose to Scoony Penn, Ohio State again. Now, the thing I like about what he says about the challenge, the SEC
Big 12,
that's a really good point because the SEC never wins that. So for Auburn to be dominating the SEC and for the SEC to win an interconference conflict like that, That's a good if we'd gotten like slaughtered in that, then you'd be like, well, mm-hmm. yeah, Auburn's leading the SEC, but how good is it, you know?
That's right.
Whereas now you're like Auburn's leading the conference and they did something the conference has never done before.
No, you're right. 100. So I think it does show the SEC is the strongest it's been in a while in men's basketball. Mm-hmm. And I think it's gonna get, you know, I think it's going to get like 8 teams in the tournament, really. It's going to get a lot.
It's amazing.
There's a lot of good basketball teams. Maybe, you know, that might be a lot, but it's going to be close. And I think whether Auburn gets a one, I'm not losing a lot of sleep about the seeding.
Right.
If Auburn's a one seed or a two seed or a three seed, like we'll get there. We'll get a favorable early round matchup, and then it'll just got to be what it's going to be from there. Some of the other teams that are up there are going to play each other again and potentially knock each other off. You know, the Virginia and Duke and Kansas and Oklahoma and those kind of teams are going to, you know, could gonna potentially knock each other around. So there's potential for those teams to get some losses as we get closer too. So,
do you know what our seed was most of the years the 80s team was going to the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight?
It was like an 8 or something.
Yeah, usually 8 or 9. Yeah, they ended up playing the number one seed like in the second round every time.
So, I mean, again, I'm not losing sleep about the seeding, but I think it does show the Big 12 Challenge was important because it showed, you know, even without its best team, mm-hmm. we went and beat this other conference that people think is really good.
That's right.
So, I mean, Auburn is the best team in the league, and we didn't even play.
That's right.
So, I mean, if we'd have played it and knocked everybody else down a notch, and we might have won more games.
Yeah.
So, and the other thing is, we'll get to be in it next year. And we're going to be playing like Kansas or somebody.
Oh boy.
How does that work?
Oklahoma. So I think they do it off the preseason rankings. But maybe the order of, I think it may be the order of finish though, where they pair the teams off based on order of finish. So, yeah.
I was wondering why we got left out, if we just did it on purpose or didn't want to do it or what it was.
No, it was because they only have 12 teams and we have 14 and we were at the bottom.
Yeah. Well, duh. Okay. Well, so they could go find two more teams just for this. There you go. I get it. Yeah. I didn't think about that. That was pretty stupid to me.
So, no, I mean, I think it's a very good sign. All right. Next question. Josh Corbett says, what is the prediction for the remainder of basketball season? Also, what's next football season to look like? It's a little early for that, but
I mean,
there's one, you know, we have a lot of tough games left on the basketball side. You know, the only really like Vanderbilt's really bad. We play them at home. That's a game you look at and go, okay, we're going to, you know, we're going to win that game. We absolutely better not lose that game. But I mean, we got a road game at Georgia. We got to play Kentucky at home on Valentine's Day. We got to go to South Carolina, to Florida, to Arkansas, you know, the second half of the schedule. So those road games are going to be tough. And we've Auburn may drop one in there in those road games, but I think, you know, in terms of the home games, we're going to be in great shape, and I can't wait till we play Kentucky at home. That place is going to, we're going to blow the roof off that building. So
it's going to be big. And this is a Kentucky team we should be able to beat. We should, I mean, it's not just a lock or anything. It'll be a tough game, but it's not like a Kentucky team coming in that there's just no chance we can win. And I'm going to say, this is a team I was praying would get to the NIT. So I'm not going to wrap myself up in knots worrying about what our seed is if we get in the NCAA tournament at all. I'll be happy just to be in there, and then we'll make some noise from there. But yeah, so we'll see. Any other questions?
No, I was thinking about the basketball schedule. Stop looking. I'm sorry. Yeah. Do you have any early thoughts on his football?
Oh, the football. Yeah. Well, that's right. I knew there was something else. Here's the thing about football. We know the defense will be pretty darn good. They lose a couple of people, but I feel pretty good about the defense. We got people coming in. We got people coming back. Hopefully the kicker will, you know, be just as good as his brother, and everything will work out there, and they can get the special teams figured out. The thing about offense is this. We know we got a quarterback, and he'll only be better. He got his shoulder tweaked a little bit in the surgical operation here the last couple of days, so he should be feeling better, hopefully. We know we've got receivers. The quarterback and receiver situation is only getting better. Other than Davis, well, that tells you a lot on the Auburn team. The which was his
name? Kyle.
No, the other one. The one that
Ryan?
Ryan, yeah. Didn't he graduate?
No.
Oh, he's coming back?
Yes.
Wow, I was thinking he was a senior.
I'm pretty sure no. Okay. Keep going.
Well, anyway, we know we've got receivers. That's not going to get any worse, especially if Ryan Davis comes back. And we know we got a quarterback. The question is the offensive line, and the question is running back. Now, we know we have good candidates to step up at running back. Do we have another Kerryon Johnson? Well, of course not. He's Kerryon Johnson. Do we have another Cameron Petway in his prime? Of course not. He was amazing 2 years ago. But do we have running backs that can step in and be who they are and be really, really good? And I think we've got enough candidates that somebody, you know, using Gus's system of wait three games and see who's doing well, which always makes nervous wrecks of us. I think if we do that, we can find somebody that can carry the rock for us. And maybe it'll be by committee for a while. Do you remember, I think it was like 2013 that we had a different leading rusher the first three or four games?
Yes. It took a while for it to work out to Trey Basin. So don't assume it's going to be, you know, very clear from the first moment.
Yeah. Yeah. There was actually a game where Corey Grant was our leading rusher. That's kind of hard to imagine now. I don't remember. I guess the third was Cameron Artis Payne. Yeah, against Arkansas State. Yeah, it was Trey 1 week, Payne 1 week, Artis Payne and Corey Grant 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so who do you we talked about this a little bit before, but who do you think is going to end up being the workhorse back this fall? I mean, I think there's really two main candidates right now. And there's nobody that really just seems ideally suited for it. We have a lot of role players in different ways that are all extremely good, but we don't seem to have anybody that just jumps out as like the every down rugged tailback. But I think that our Devin Barrett, if he puts on some weight and some muscle, could do it. And maybe Asa Martin, right?
Mm-hmm. No,
and if we don't get Asa Martin killed in his true freshman season, he's only going to get bigger and stronger, you know. I mean, think about Trey Mason when he was a freshman. He looked like Ontario McCaleb, you know. He had to bulk up, and he did.
And I think Barrett, you know, could bulk up and carry the ball inside more, and maybe they trust him more to do that. So that could happen. But no, I mean, I could see it. You know, we could actually have a rotation and not be one guy dependent.
Yeah,
That would be crazy, but it's possible.
It would be crazy. Oh well.
Can
we get the offensive line situated? I mean, we've got players, right? We just got to get them to do the mythical gelling.
Well, we didn't even talk about Herb Hand left.
Oh, that's
and we
right.
brought back Coach Grubbs. It's the last time we had the podcast. Herb Hand went to Texas, and we brought back Coach Grimes
What a weird situation. I mean, we know that Grimes. Here's the thing. If it stayed the way it was, that Grimes was gone and Hand was our coach, then the story that we were given at the time could stand, right? Well, there was nothing wrong with Coach Grimes. Remember, didn't he have cancer or something, and he wasn't feeling good, and he went off to be with his son at Cincinnati, I think under Tuberville or something. Okay, and Herb Hand, we were all excited about him because he'd worked with Gus before. He had a lot of knowledge of the offense, et cetera, et cetera. Well, after, a couple of years of that, it's not that Coach Hand was doing a bad job, but didn't you get the sense that people were kind of feeling like he wasn't quite living up maybe to what we were hoping in some ways, at least in terms of actually coaching the offensive line?
Well, there were issues. I mean, the pass blocking we saw was a problem. Some of those games, we got the quarterback killed. And so I felt like he did a good job in terms of mixing and matching and developing the guys and having guys ready to play, you know, and shifting guys, making the decision to shift guys in and out. But there were still games when, you know, the pass block in particular was bad.
Yeah.
He got hired away to be the offensive line coach and co-offensive coordinator at Texas. And so I'm happy for him. But I'm also, like, not crying either. Now, can Grimes get us back to where we were in 2013? I don't know. But, yeah, Gus trusts him. Trust him with the offensive line and trust him to kind of bring out the toughness that he wants in the offensive line. So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's about it. So I don't think we're going to step back any. There were people saying, oh, we fired him and now we're going and rehiring a guy we fired or something. We didn't fire him. That gets us into you kind of have to just make up your own narrative of what exactly happened before. Was it a Rhett Lashley-like, we love you, so we're finding you a golden parachute, but we're pushing you out the airplane?
We love you, but we'd love you more somewhere else.
Somewhere else, right. Hey, and didn't Rhett go somewhere else this year?
I think
he moved on.
He left Connecticut and went somewhere else?
Yeah, I believe he did.
Yeah, he did, but I can't remember where.
I don't remember where it was. Yeah, well. All right. Any last comments before we wrap things up and I edit together this monstrosity of a show?
Fan, we persevered. We stuck with it. We overcame technology and created a podcast.
I hope. We created I'm getting feedback now, that which is just perfect. That's just that's just the cherry on top of the crap cake. All right. Well, let's just go ahead and say our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
So what becomes of you?
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Go to bed.